Welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love your questions today. Call those in to 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Because this is radio, I feel obligated to tell our listeners we're doing Ask the Mayor a little bit differently. We're doing it in a different studio now, so maybe it'll sound a little bit different. It'll certainly sound very different the next couple of weeks with Mayors Barton and McBarnes, and we'll tell you more about that when it comes. But as always, nice to see you in this studio or any other.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me again. It looks nice in here. It sounds good.
It's the pledge drive edition of Ask the Mayor, so there's lots of member drive stuff hanging around, so thanks for putting up with that. Let's start with a question from Andrew, who says the following. He says, I live in Lafayette and bike or bus every day to Purdue for work. For the last 3 years, there's been a construction project requiring me to dismount at the pedestrian bridge and walk my bike up a flight of stairs. He says, for one glorious day last year, the path was open and I could ride the entire route using bike lanes or bike boulevards. Is there an expected end date for this construction project and the full linking of a safe and walk/bike-friendly route linking Lafayette and West Lafayette across the pedestrian bridge?
I'm sure he's talking about the pathway that's designed with the promenade project.
Yes.
Because we've been working on, we had to make some structural changes to that project, and then that whole ramp area is going to need to be, it was torn out and is going to need to be completely redone after some work is done on the actual wall piece that has to be done. So if everything go smooth, and this project certainly has had its challenges, our date for final completion of that project is this November, and I think we're very close. As you know, we've changed several 10 to 12 beams that were originally put in. We've done some other stabilization work. We're making sure that this is done right. The board became concerned after some of the construction started that we were concerned with some of the design. And so we have went back through this in painstaking detail to make sure that every piece of this is right and safe for all the types of events that we want to have, all the things that we want to be able to do on it. And we're very close now to going into that final phase of one of the retaining walls. Once that's done, we can pour that ramp back in and connect it, and the goal is that will all be done and completed by November of this year.
So, unfortunately, right at the time where people are probably going to be putting the bikes up.
But okay. It will be nice, even for people that might still be walking. The good thing about it, because that's a rec project, but the city, put the ramp on the other end of the bridge, so there is, as you come across the rail bridge there. So the good thing is, once both of theirs are done, if for some reason the elevators would not be working, there would be ramp systems now to even for walkers or people with disabilities that may need that.
And REC, for those who don't know, the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation.
Yes.
So let's move on to talking about something the Tippecanoe County Council did this week, which is take the first step toward a new income tax increase to fund public safety in the county. It doesn't come as a surprise to me that you and Mayor Dennis, both as former law enforcement officers, could find a way to be behind this. Let me ask you, if you're going to raise $8 million in the county every year, what is that going to do that's not currently being done?
Right. The city's portion of that will be about $3.1 million, will be about our portion that we will get. And for us, we've been working on this for quite some time. In fact, we've actually done space studies and different things. One of the big things is we need a new police station. The current location of the police department was built back in the 50s. It was remodeled in 1994, so almost 25 years ago. We have grown almost, not quite, between civilian and police officers, almost doubled in size, not quite double, but getting pretty close. And we are simply out of room and space, and out of the type of space that we need to be able to do police work into the future, 25, 30 years from now. So one of the pieces for us is we need to build a new police station.
How quickly do you think you'd want to do that?
Well, We've been working for about the past year and a half, having studies done on how many square feet that we will need for now and years in the future, then also looking at what that might cost, so we have some idea of what that cost might be. And then I've also brought this up with the county commissioners and the sheriff, and Patrick Flannelly brought it up as part of his presentation. I'm also...
Your police chief.
The police chief of the Lafayette Police Department. I've told them I believe it's time that the city and the county combine our dispatch centers. You know, Purdue and Westside have combined theirs. I think it's time that we combined ours. When you look at the way the county is structured now and the way we work together, and even, you know, there are parts of the county you can't tell when you leave the city and enter the county almost. So I think it's time, instead of operating two of these facilities, it's time to consolidate into one. This will give us a chance to build a state-of-the-art 911 communications data center.
Now, are you talking about all four of them being
No, the Purdue and Westside would keep theirs,
okay.
And then we'd, so there'd be two. So if there was some type of catastrophic failure at one of them, we'd still have a second center in the county, but we don't need three. And I think two in this new facility would also, I'm hoping we can reach agreement on that, because this new facility would give us the chance then to build a center that would be able to do that. I think in the long run is much more efficient, much more cost effective. I think it'd be not on the way we handle calls, the one ways we can allocate manpower and resources and different things like that, and also the sharing of information and data, I think will get much simpler. And so, you know, that's...
So you've got a couple of potential big building projects here. Obviously, $3 million a year is not going to be nearly enough to cover even a portion of one of them.
No, we'd issue a bond, and we'd use a portion of that money to pay the bond. So that, and then, of course, the training facility, you know, we have a training facility up on South Street that we bought about 10 years ago for about $250,000, and we have milked our use of that. That building is very old. It was an old school, then it was the old National Guard Armory, and it's not capable anymore of handling the type of training that modern police agencies need to do. And so we'll be looking at also a smaller project, not on the scale of a new police station, but a smaller project at a different location for a training center. So we have some needs like that, and we know about what those costs are. But then we do want to add some staff, as I talked about at the meeting. Crime has changed. The use of technology by criminals and by us to help solve crime has dramatically changed in the last 10 years, and we really need to add 2 to 3 detectives that really, really just focus on cyber crime, online crime, that focus, and then also not just the crime that's committed, but using that to solve crime through the use of software and technologies that look at social media, that look at other cyber clues that are left by people. And we just need to hire 2 or 3 people to do that. We need to add a few more officers to the street crimes unit and the drug task force.
Someone might ask, why add a couple of cyber crime detectives rather than just, say, retraining existing people on the force?
Well, because we just don't have time. I mean, we took over 100,000 CAD calls last year, and so those people that, you know, when the calls come in or the calls that require follow-up by our detectives, there is no way we could take 2 or 3 people and say, okay, you don't do anything but work on these types of cyber crimes and help develop clues for the other cases by taking 3 current detectives off the street. There's no possible way they can keep up with the workload. So we need to actually add staff to be able to do that. The drug interdiction team that we have here that's doing a very good work out on 65, 52, 231, you know, that's funded by a grant. If that grant would run out, we'd have to have a way to fund that, because that team absolutely needs to stay in place. It's making good headway. So we've looked at this for a couple years, and we studied it. I think we presented a very compelling case why it's important to do this, to keep this community safe, and to make sure that we're able for 10, 20 years, 30 years in the future have the capacity to continue to do this. And the public that I've talked to have been incredibly supportive. And they're said, you know, if this is money is going to public safety and that's what it has to go to, they're supportive of it to help keep the community safe.
It's a relatively small amount of money per person. You know, it's $5 or $6 a month when you get right down to it. And I think that that's, you know, it, when spread out over a city with a population your size, it becomes easier to manage for sure. In terms of whether you're going to hire people to deal with crime the way it is now, I was looking at the city's crime mapping statistics this morning before you came in, and both violent crime and drug crime, the number of incidences are down year over year over the last couple of years. We talked probably 3 years ago now on this program about the spike that you had seen, and, mm-hmm. and then you and I talked about ways the city was going to try to stem that. It seems like some headway is being made little by little, and I suppose someone might look at that and go, Mayor, if crime is already going down with what you're doing, why is now the right time to increase this tax? Wouldn't that have been 3 years ago to try and really hit the thing hard? But it seems like, could you be a victim of your own success?
Well, I think there's a couple ways to answer that. One, we did implement some programs that are making a difference. We do have robbery is down. We do have overall UCR1 crimes are down, but unfortunately aggravated assaults and the number of shootings are up. And so there is some mixed information in there, and we need some time and the people and the resources to really spend on those cases, some of those very serious cases, giving people longer amounts of time to say, hey, you can focus on this before you get your next 10 cases that you've got to try to start on to dig into those to try to really find some of the root causes and some of the root people that are involved in those. And so
it sounds to me like what you're saying is you need more investigative resources, more than perhaps total bodies out on the street. You need to be able to say you can take the time necessary to solve this one intractable case.
And we know that when it comes particularly to violent crime, there is a very small percentage of people that commit that and are involved with that over and over. And to build those types of cases, gather that type of intelligence to be able to put together prosecutable cases are important. But the other piece, too, that I want to add quickly, if you don't mind, is, you know, we also need to look at our recruiting. It is incredibly difficult to recruit police officers across the United States. You ask any department, they'll tell you the same thing. And so in order to be competitive, we need to make sure that our police and our firefighters are adequately compensated. And so we'll be looking at part of this, how do we make sure that we're able to stay competitive throughout the country to attract people here so we get the best and the brightest police officers. We absolutely will not lower our standards to take people, but the number of people that we get taking the test now that are interested, that number continues to drop because it is a very difficult job.
So you're talking about increasing salary and benefits.
Yeah, increasing salaries. And then there's things that we can't control. The chief really believes we're a firm believer in body cameras. We have a great system. We're actually trying to expand that system so it would even capture more data, more footage, and do some things with the in-car cameras and everything linked together. But with the number of officers and the amount of calls that we run, he fully expects that our next contract on our body cams will probably double in cost. When you look at cloud storage and things like that, it'll probably double in cost if we want to keep a great system and we want to keep expanding our transparency to the community and have all the data and all the footage. He thinks that cost will continue to grow.
Let me ask you about the county side. Practically since he became sheriff, Bob Goldsmith has been going before county boards and asking for more manpower, more different ways he can bolster his department. Right now, as I look at it, about half the cash would go to the county sheriff's office, mm-hmm. if I read it correctly. Do you think that the county sheriff's office is understaffed and needs all of these extra resources? Do they need half the money?
Well, there's several things that have to happen at the county. One, they're going to have to fund the new court also. So some of that money, I believe, over time will have to be used to fund the new court that was created by the state legislature. And they've already had to add prosecutors and public defenders. So the county has added, as is demonstrated, quite a few people to public safety over the years. But where that has an allocation hasn't happened, and even to jail staff, is actually road deputies. If you look at the number of road deputies, it's been very static for a long time. In fact, I think they, in the last couple months, they've assigned somebody to the drug task force, but we went 4 or 5 years where they didn't put anybody on the drug task force with us. They don't have anybody, to my knowledge, assigned to the cyber crime unit that's working out of Purdue. They don't have anybody assigned to our drug interdiction team. It's Lafayette, West Lafayette, and the state police. There's a lot of things taking place that they have not actually engaged in with yet because they don't have the road deputies. And I think having people to put on those groups is incredibly important. Again, I don't think anybody thinks that crime or drugs don't move back and forth from the city to the county to West Lafayette. And we have to have these multi-jurisdictional units working together and sharing information and sharing data and sharing resources. It will make us more effective in the long run. And then, as I said at the beginning, I feel if we go to a single for the city and the county 911 communications data center, we can even enhance that greatly. So I do believe the sheriff is in need of those funds for road deputies to actually put more people out on the street and then to put more people involved in these things. There was a time a few years ago where they didn't actually have any canines for a while. They do have some again now. And so the other agencies were helping when they needed canines. Some of our canines even helped when they did searches of some of their schools and things like that. So it's good that they've got the canines back and doing some of those things. And I think they will have some very good uses for these dollars that the community will appreciate and see a difference.
You've said you think your city council is very likely to pass this.
Yes, sir.
The county council passed it 6-1. The only no vote, Councilman Winger said that he thought the case to him seemed rushed. He wasn't sure there was enough justification for spending the money. You obviously disagree with that. You don't think this was pushed through too quickly without enough justification?
I don't. And I think, you know, from the city of Lafayette side, we've been looking at this for almost 3 years, and we've even hired a company, like I said, that did a study on our space and our training center. And we've been looking. We invested about $500,000 in the ARC that we have in the basement of City Hall now to gather data, to bring in the feeds from all the different cameras to help us do some of the things we're talking about that. But that's just a prototype, and that's what I said at that meeting. It's only about a fourth of the size that we need and a fourth of the capacity that we need, but that's all we could afford. But we're like business, right? We developed a prototype, and now we need to be able to scale it to do what we need to do for the whole community. So I feel like we have, through the programs that we started, the costs that we know will incur, the space studies that we've done, the prototypes that we've created, and now the ability to scale those to really meet the need, I feel like we've done a good job preparing, and we didn't rush into this. And I feel the Sheriff's Department can demonstrate that they haven't added road deputies for quite some time, or at least not many of them, and that being able to do that and to put some people in these other task force with us, it'd be great if we could even have more than one deputy in the drug task force. I think the city of Lafayette, I think we put 7 people in it. If we could have a couple people, would be great. And at the end of the day, it will pay dividends for the people that live in this community. I believe they will feel this is money well spent.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA, talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Ruzworski. You can send your questions to us via email. ask@wbaa.org is the address. You may also call them in to 765-496-1999. We've been reporting on the demolition now of the E.M. Weaver building at the Five Points intersection, which began kind of when the building decided it would begin, I suppose.
Yeah.
And now it looks like pretty soon here that's going to actually proceed in the next short while here. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you and I have talked about the time frame for redeveloping Five Points. And you said, look, realistically, this is probably 5 to 7 years off and things like that. But there are two parts of this. One, we want to talk a little bit about that corner, because you get a chance, I suppose, to start rethinking it maybe a little earlier than you thought you might. And you get a chance to, at some point, probably have a space that could be open for development that you probably didn't think would be. How does that allow you to rethink the way the project goes forward for the next 5 to 7 years. Do you get to use that spot as a test case in a certain way?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as we said, first of all, it's unfortunate that the building got into that condition and had to reach this point, but the reality it did and it has. And you are correct. Hopefully, I believe tomorrow, I spoke with Mr. Virick personally, so unless something's changed, he'll be closing on an additional piece of property up there that he was able to buy. And so he'll have a considerable amount of that block, not the entire block, but a considerable amount of it now. And that should help spur demolition. So for your listening audience, the reason we have waited two for that closing is the plan is that he will tear down the piece he's going to close on tomorrow.
Toward the thing he's buying, right?
Yes, and then he can get the equipment in there and kind of tear it down from the inside out as opposed to being out on our streets and everything. So we were willing to wait and work with him because that's a good thing. But it as you indicated, the second part of your question, there is a chance this will speed things up a little bit because now there'll be a significant piece of that block that will be gone. So if Mr. Virick is looking for partners or, you know, discussions with the city, with the building actually down and gone, it in my mind certainly would, you would think, might make it easier to get something started and maybe get the first piece of that going. I don't know if Mr. Virick has had serious conversations yet with Snyder Lennon. That'd be the last business and building that would still be on that block that he wouldn't own, because after that he owns up to the corner with his other buildings and mm-hmm. he owns this way. And I don't know if those talks have progressed, but certainly this could be a catalyst for getting the first project in that going maybe a little bit sooner than we thought.
We had a question from a listener who was wondering about, you know, sees a building falling down and starts to think about all of the historic buildings you've got. And you've got quite a bit of older building stock in that neck of the woods, mm-hmm. especially, which you and I have talked about the possible redevelopment of as part of that project. And the listener says, well, how do you pay attention to making sure that the infrastructure in those buildings is good enough that you can, for instance, continue to reap property tax revenue from it, because you're going to get more from a building than you're going to get from a vacant lot in mm-hmm. most cases, versus making sure that you're on the right time schedule to redevelop it, which probably is going to bring you more property tax revenue when it's all done. How do you balance mm-hmm. those two things?
Well, obviously, you have to sometimes pick and choose which projects you get involved with too, and where you funnel that money. Because, you know, the building itself would be primarily a private development. I mean, there could be some city participation, maybe up there more primarily in the infrastructure, the sidewalks, the trails, the roads, the drainage, the things we've talked about like that, more than in just the building itself. But as you know, there are some downtown buildings that the city is actively involved with that help make them reality. The Renaissance Place, the Mark, Star City Crossing that's underway right now. But there is only so much we can do, and there is only so much potential revenue to go around. And so even if I'm trying to answer the question. So even if it was a vacant lot and a new building might help us get more tax revenue, if the margins didn't line up right or the cash flow wasn't right, we would still have to say no at the time to ensure that we didn't do anything that got in over our head. And that would not be easy to say no, but if that had to be at that particular moment, that is what we would do. But we would hope between the private development and a public piece that we could do, that we would find the resources to keep that moving in a timely manner. But to answer your question, there's no guarantee that timing will work out perfectly.
You've got a master plan for what you hope to do with Five Points in a number of years. If a private developer comes in and sees this vacant lot on the corner there and goes, I want to put something in there, do you get any oversight as to how that looks, how it fits in with your existing plan, et cetera?
Well, there's some zoning requirements, so setbacks and things like that, obviously. But other than that, typically not a lot, unless, like those other buildings, we end up being a financial partner at some level. And if we do that, we make those groups sign development agreements with us that does give us some of that authority to help pick out design, materials, look, things
like that. Because obviously you have a way that you'd like this to look
right.
a decade
we
from now.
We can't, you know, dictate that 100%, but if we put money into it, and usually it's a fairly small percentage, but we do put in the development agreement that we get input on how that looks, design, materials, things like that. Dennis Carson does a great job for us on most of our projects. He takes the lead on those types of discussion. He's got a good eye for those things. And
your city development director.
Yeah, love for downtown and historic properties and a good way of blending neighborhoods.
And in just our last couple of minutes here, I want to shift topics. You've decided not to go this year on the annual trip that typically you and Mayor Dennis and Tom Murtaugh go on to Washington, D.C. to get some face time with Indiana's representatives there. What made you make that decision individually for yourself this year?
Well, it's not our normal trip. I mean, normally we go, you know, in February or March, and we didn't go last year because the government was shut down. So they put this trip together with the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. So it's in October. So a couple things. One, it's a very busy period for me. It's leading up to our municipal election, even though I don't have an opponent. I do have people on my team that have an opponent. It's the Bravo lunch for the arts. There's a lot of things going on, and quite frankly, when I looked at the itinerary, there are several fun things on there, but not things that are quite necessary. And then,
so you didn't think there was enough substance?
Well, not for me to miss all the other things I needed to miss. And then when I double checked this. This trip, when we always go, we always met personally with our Congress people. But on this trip, you don't meet with your Congress people. You meet with their legislative director or someone. You don't meet face to face with them. Then with Senator Young and Senator Braun, they are going to do a joint meeting, the two of them, for 30 minutes. And so when I looked
at... Would you normally get individual FaceTime with them?
We used to get individual. We'd do the senators individually. I'm not saying there's nothing or anything wrong with doing it together, and if I know they're busy, but when I looked at the cost of the trip, what we were doing, and the fact that Greater Lafayette Commerce, to my understanding, is going to go back to Washington in the spring. So in the spring of 2020, we're getting back on our normal kind of schedule. I just didn't feel that it was a good use of my time or the city's financial resources.
Does it give you
anything against anybody. It's just a lot going on. And to go in October, then go again in the spring. And the way it's set up, I think there's better uses of my time.
Does it give you more time to prepare what you're going to say for the spring, especially since it will have been a considerably longer interval between trips than normal for you?
Yeah, well, they're working on some white papers to take, even for this trip, and I don't know if we have a federal government committee through Greater Lafayette Commerce, if they'll probably update those before we go again, or if they get some feedback between now and then. My guess is that they will look at updating those. I don't go to all of those meetings personally.
Lastly, in just our last couple of seconds, we've been talking about the scooters returning to town as the students return. What kind of information, if any, are you getting from the scooter companies that were interested in being in your city?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen an actual printout of usage, but I have noticed since the students came back, the usage has went up substantially. And I'm pleased to say no complaints. Everybody seems to be doing a pretty good job with them. They're getting picked up. They're being put back properly in the places, recharged. I don't think I've had one call or one email so far. Somebody complaining said they didn't think it was going okay. So right now, no news is good news.
All right. Well, we'll check back on that. Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time.
Thanks, Dan.
And remember, you can find this show archived at our website, WBAA.org. A little bit of a schedule switch next week. Tune in for our conversation with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Burton at this time next week. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.